Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where Juliana reviews every single science fiction book that she reads as she reads it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever she finishes a book. We do the review and it goes up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is, of course, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And I didn't read the book that we're going to talk about today.
That rarely happens.
Do we have any... Normally, we talk a bit about news. We haven't... We've got no news, really, have we?
Yes, there is one thing. Did.
There is one thing. I mentioned on a previous episode, like two episodes, when I did a The Adventures of Amina al-Sirafi... And I said, Goodreads now has a functionality
yes.
of DNF, did not finish shelf, you know, yeah. official did not finish shelf. And I said, that is now going to be added to the SFBRP. And it has been.
Yeah.
So now if you go to SFBRP and click on episode lists, you'll find the episode list. And DNF is listed alongside the rating. So you can see which books that I didn't finish and rated, which books that I didn't finish and didn't rate, you know, so some are rated, some are not rated.
Yeah.
And now you can see there which books are DNFs or not.
Also, you can see books that Luke previously did read and finish and rated, and then second time did not.
Sometimes I'll have reviewed a book twice,
yeah.
And I didn't finish it one time and did finish it the other time.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see about those. There's still a few that I need to update, you know, a few things that I need to update, which I haven't yet. You know, just... Because sometimes I don't remember if I finished a book or not. And now I'd have to go back and look at my notes or re-listen to the podcast just to find out if I, this time, did I finish the book or not. And I'm not going to do that. That's not that important.
No.
The other thing that I did, I've worked out a new link system where the links have always annoyed me on the SFBRP. That when I started this, in 2008, there wasn't, I couldn't work out a good way to work out the links. So I was just like, oh, I'll just use the archive links because the archive links never change, you know.
Yes.
So, but the thing is, they also increment up numbers, but not
random
one by
numbers.
One. They're kind of like every new archive link is just sort of like four numbers later or something. So
yeah.
Even though we're at episode 586, the archive link to it is 2437 or 2437. And that's always annoyed me when I've been sharing links. It's sort of like SFBRP /archive /, what was it?
2437.
And that's not really important. That is the unique link that will always exist, that will, you know, WordPress users and Google users all these other things use. But now I've worked out a way. I let Claude Code work out a way to redirect SFBRP /episode/286 will just go to the right thing. So
because that is actually the important bit for the humans.
Yeah, but so for human readable links, I've now just put, you know, SFBRP /episode/ a number, and that's now going to work.
Yeah.
So
that's nice.
So when I'm sharing links on Mastodon or Blue Sky or on Goodreads or something, I'm going to always share, from now on, I'm going to share the /episode link rather than /archive link. Small thing, but you know, now that we have our, we once did an episode called Living Our Best Science Fiction Lives. Do you remember that? It was like a special episode where we're like, technology makes our lives better. And this feels like I'm in a science fiction future because, and now that feels like I've got myself a robot coworker to help me work. Cause I would never have worked all of that on myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have done.
But it would be so much work.
Well,
it wouldn't be so much work, but
I would, like, the research that I would have to do to work out the best way to do it.
That's the work, I mean.
Yeah.
You would have to do the research. And then the research that you can do online isn't always suitable for what you are looking for.
Yeah, and so now Claude just goes, oh, yeah, what you need to do is you need to... It's sort of like, here are three ways you could do it. And I pick the way that works. But, oh, and then you just do this, upload this thing. I'll write this script. I'm going to run through it. I'm going to look through your database and do all of this. And then I'm going to add this other stuff to the other database. And I'm like, oh, man, I would never write a script to update a database on the WordPress website by visiting a PHP page.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I didn't even know you could do... I mean, of course, you could do that, but I would never have attempted that.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of that to say is if in the future we DNF a book, do not finish a book...
It will now be represented in the
SFBRP listing along with the rating of the book there. So that's it for updates. Now let's get on to a book that I did not read. Juliana, did you get this from the library? Is it
a library? It's a library book I waited for ages.
Okay,
like,
so
weeks, months.
Just as a framing of this, I didn't read this, and yep. Juliana started reading it, and she says, oh, maybe you'd like it. And the more things she told me about it, the less it appealed to me, yes. as every new, not just every new line or sentence or whatever, every new word that came out of Juliana's mouth when she described this book to me made me less likely for me to read this yeah. book. So,
to be honest, at the beginning, I thought, oh, Luke might enjoy that. The more I read it,
you also thought the same
I
thing.
Thought, no, this is in no way a book for Luke.
Well, let's not give away if you enjoyed the book or you like the book or you're recommending the book or what your rating is. But let's go into where did this book come from? Who wrote the book and where did it come from?
All right.
How did you end up reading it?
Okay, this book is called, now I have to scroll back in the ebook again because
it's called Of Monsters and Mainframes.
Stop it. Okay. Why are you doing that?
Oh, okay. I thought I was just helping you out.
No, you're not helping me out. It would have taken one more second.
Okay.
So it's called Of Monsters and Mainframes.
Yeah.
Written by Barbara Truelove.
Yep.
It's a very recent book written in 2025.
It was on the Goodreads Choice Award nominee for Reader's Favorite Science Fiction in 2025.
Exactly. It was also on somebody's, like, on the Goodreads listener group, SFBRP listener group, there was a short thread, short post, forum post, where people posted their favorite books from last year.
Oh, okay.
And I think this book was mentioned there.
Let's have a look. Top three SFF books read in 2025. So, did somebody mention it? Oh, this is Lindsay. I'll do an honorable mention rather than the best of reread. So, it's an honorable mention, not even in his top three.
Okay, but it
of
was
Monsters
mentioned.
And Mainframes by Barbara Truelove.
And
yes.
the title sounded fun. I like also, I'm a really visual person. So, yeah. The book cover I thought was really good.
Yeah, it's a fun
and
book cover.
It convinced me to put it in a hold for the library. And because it is
a very recent book,
yeah. There's obviously only one copy available for everyone who wanted to read it.
Yep.
And I was in line, like it was a long line, really long waiting. And so I read lots of other books in the meantime. And then it became available and I thought, okay, I give it a go. And I generally am sometimes a bit hesitant in the way that you frame criticisms of books or the way that you state things about books. So I'm trying to do this a bit more with constructive criticism here.
What do you mean?
As in,
just say a book's really shit and
exactly.
stop reading it.
And that's not what I'm, that's not what I like to do. And yeah. that's not what I think.
But do you enjoy a book more for not thinking it's very good, but carrying on reading it anyway?
I see books in the way that I think there will be people for who this book is.
Yes, but if that is not you,
it doesn't matter.
Can you appreciate this would be a good book for somebody not Luke and probably not me, and just enjoy it from a, like, how well is this book not for me?
Yes.
Like, how well is this book doing for people who would enjoy it more than I do?
There are two categories of these kind of books.
Right.
There's the category of the book that I now take as a representative is How to Win the Time War.
This is how you lose the time war.
This is how you lose, that book. I really didn't like the writing. I didn't get it. It was too confusing. I didn't get into it at all. So I did not finish that.
I
stopped reading it because I knew this is just not for me.
Yeah.
I knew it would be for others, but I didn't care. This book, however, of Monsters and Mainframes, is a book that slots in very nicely among other stories.
Mm-hmm.
And on Goodreads, there was one review that really got that correctly.
Yeah.
It said something along like, if you enjoy Becky Chambers...
No, I think that's in the blurb of it.
No.
Oh, okay.
It was a review.
I'm pretty sure
it was a review. So there is a certain group of books that slots in. And so I've read this book more from a observing point of view of like also reflecting on why, what is it with this style of book that I think lacks so much in my ability of liking it. It's not difficult to read in that respect, right, as that I didn't get into it or whatever. But there was something in it that I really think was not well written and good.
Oh, okay.
And I want to state my reasons why. And
Of that you kept reading it, or that you think it's not well written?
Why I think it's not well written.
Okay.
And it took me a while, and also it took me literally while I before I read this of Monsters and Mainframes, I read Inversions. Okay.
Okay.
So I have a direct reference.
No, and this is, again, it's not really fair. You know, like,
I know it's not.
When we're talking in the Inversions review, I was like, well, why can't all authors just do work at this level? It's like not fair to hold up. Again, I'm not saying this is bad, but if you go into it in that with that framework,
yes,
you know.
And I'm not expecting this kind of high level writing everyone.
But I had the same thing with the Adventures of Amina Al-Sarafi, book was,
yeah,
because I knew that we were sitting down to review those books back to back.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I was like, well, this is like one of the worst books I've ever read, and now I'm going to review it back to back with one of the best books I've ever read.
Yeah, but that gave me the opportunity to reflect on myself,
right? What you want?
Why? That is, why is there such a stark difference between writing and what does it do to me? So that's what I want to say.
Okay, but before we get there, should we just say what the book is? Or do you think everyone just is going to be fine with you talking about what you didn't like about it before you've even framed the book or like frame the review? Because I looked at this title here as well. Again, you told me that I shouldn't read it. I guess I'd seen it on a list or something like this, you know, and thought, it's probably not for me. But it says here, spaceships... of Monsters and Mainframes, but Abitula. Spaceships aren't programmed to seek revenge, but for Dracula, Demeter will make an exception. Demeter? How do you pronounce it?
I read it as an ebook. Okay. I pronounced it... in the German way, the Demeter.
Demeter, okay, Demeter.
Yeah.
So, however it's pronounced.
So it's famous, a Greek goddess.
No.
The name.
Famous name of the ship, which is the ship that delivered Dracula to Whitby in the Dracula story.
Right. I did not know that.
Okay, so if you didn't know that...
No.
Okay, so already my opinion of this book has gone down.
Yeah, I understand. It fits the whole thing.
Did Dracula, like, is Dracula... Okay, just a quick question. Is the Dracula in this story the same Dracula as the one that ended up taking another ship called the Demeter to Whitby in, you know, 1802 or whenever it was?
Yes.
It's the same Dracula?
Yes.
It's not like a Dracula. It's not like, oh, this is a vampire who takes on... It is the same Dracula.
Yes.
Who just happens to take a second ship with the same name.
Yes.
And what, kills everyone on board, comes off as in the shape of a werewolf or whatever they do?
No, vampires are not werewolves.
No, but I think...
Famously not.
No, but I didn't... Oh, no, one second. But wasn't there a dog? What, didn't it come off the ship as a dog?
There is...
Dracula, Demeter, dog? Is it a dog? In Bram Stoker's Dracula, a large dog, widely believed to be the vampire himself, leaps from the stranded ship Demeter, upon arrival in Whitby, vanishing into the town. This scene serves as Dracula's entry into England and transforming the escape. So, yeah, that's it. Like, he is a dog. The dog does jump off, and that is described. So, okay, now I'm really confused that this dog mouth here on the front here with these teeth.
Well, that is a vampire.
Is that vampire?
That's
vampire
teeth. Okay.
Oh, yes, you're right. They're vampire teeth, but that's not a dog. Okay.
No. However, they are also werewolves.
They're also werewolves.
Let's
dig down into this because this is what I need to know about this book.
Okay.
To understand the level that this book is working on.
Mm-hmm.
Did Dracula decide, I need to get from Earth to Alpha Centauri, And wouldn't it be cool if I book passage on a ship which has the same name as the ship that I sailed from wherever it was to Whitby?
Yes.
Does Dracula think that it's a fun thing? Oh, this ship has the same name as the other ship that I arrived on, turned into a dog and jumped off and started terrorizing Whitby. Or is that the case?
That is not explained.
That is not explained.
No.
So it is just a random cosmic coincidence that literal Dracula mm-hmm. gets on a ship mm-hmm. between Earth and Alpha Centauri, and nobody in the book says, oh, this ship has got the same name as this ship that was over here. Nobody makes that reference.
No.
And you didn't know that that was the name of the ship.
No.
And that Dracula turns into a dog and jumps off the ship after everyone on the ship is dead.
However, that fits very much with the rest of the book.
So, yeah, okay. So it just so it's assuming that you know more than you do, but then if you don't know that, it just goes with any...
Yeah, things are left like...
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so...
Okay, so that is one thing that happens. There's, you know how it's called Of Monsters...
Of Monsters and Mainframes,
okay, so
of Mice and Men. Yeah.
One part of this book is Dracula takes a ride on the ship.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, you already mentioned, there's in the original story, obviously, some dog stuff involved. However, I think either I missed that bit.
Yeah.
Or, in this case, there's a whole other story of werewolves.
Right.
So there's a whole family of werewolves turning up as well. So that's the second
what?
Thing. Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Third thing is there is another monster-like thing that's called Frankenstein.
So we're just doing like the Hammer horror universe of whatever.
The fourth thing that turns up
right.
is a... never really quite explained a alien mummy consisting
so
of...
So we're literally doing vampires. Does Jekyll and Hyde turn up? Does the Invisible Man turn up? Are we getting all of these...
It's like all mixed.
Does Cthulhu turn up?
All things. It's all the things, okay? So it's the four different things. And on top of that...
Yeah.
We are constantly going between Alpha Centauri A and B.
Right.
And Earth.
Yeah, it's a triple system. There's three stars in Alpha Centauri.
Anyway, so that is that. And also we are on a sentient AI...
ship.
Ship.
Yeah.
That is like a passenger ship, which also has cargo. Passengers and cargo on it.
Right, yeah.
Okay, and it's basically a ferry between these ports. And also, we have a subroutine that runs among the bigger AI, which is a medical unit,
right?
Which is called Stewart,
right?
Dr. Stewart, and they have the ship and the subroutine have different programs that run like different routines. So the doctor routine is a bit more like it can communicate
with sub-personalities.
Yeah, it can communicate with humans directly and also see like it can use the camera and use them. The ship routine obviously is not quite as sophisticated from the human's point of view.
I think we've set it up.
All that happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, all right, let's get into it then.
And so here's where the problems start for me.
Okay.
This book switches between storylines.
Right.
Like somebody switches out their underwear every day. So we have one thing happens.
Yeah.
Then action, 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 action.
Yeah.
Something happens and it stops.
Yeah.
Next thing happens. Action, 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 action. More things. Stops. Yeah. Another one. And so we...
But are they progressing the same plot? Are they going with the same characters? Or is it just stuff happening?
So the people who are staying the same as the ship. The ship and the subroutine...
Yeah, they stay on board.
Because it all happens on that ship.
Right, okay.
That ship is meant to be scrapped multiple times, but then isn't. And then for some reason, a few hundred years later, it's on the same journey again. I don't know. There's no explanation. It just happens. So,
like time skips, point of view skips.
Point of view skips. And it happens so that there's lots of people on board again. Oh, I missed the thing. I missed one monster, which is just put in between. There's suddenly some fish aliens take over. It's a bit much.
Okay, so what you're saying is just scattershot. It's sort of like someone has ideas and just puts them in there and they just go, oh, that's enough of that. And then we'll move on to the next thing and that's enough of that.
Yes. And it's...
Quick question.
Yeah.
Why is all of this happening on one ship? Did like all monsters in the known universe all decide just to ride on the same ship?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
It's not explained.
No.
This doesn't have the reputation of this is the one that's friendly to monsters.
It's just called the ghost ship. And this is where all that happens.
Okay.
And it happens to always just be that ship.
All right, next thing.
Next thing is the constant change of viewpoint characters.
Oh, really?
Yes, that too. Because it's
not
enough.
So it's not chapter by chapter?
Well, yes, it is. Like, sometimes the chapters are very short and then it's from a different character's point of view. And it feels like we get the aftermath of everything and then we get short interview kind of like now we get to read what that person thinks about or that person did or that person thought or monster or ship or whatever. And it's like a constant. So we have lots of action, lots of changes of things constantly, lots of viewpoint characters that constantly change. And this is one of those books that does all that. And I understand the use of switching character points of views. But if your book already is really action filled and lots of things happen, there needs to be some sort of quiet explanation, like or a quiet observer or like some sort of thing that connects it to me as a reader. Because there were so many different characters popping up that I struggled to build up any sort of, do I like that person? What is that person? Who is that person?
You don't get to settle in with the characters. Yeah,
absolutely. And so this, in the way that I understand some people's reviews of, oh, this is fun and stuff. I think what they think is that it is fun to read about vampires in space.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree. They read about sentient ships, spaceships.
Yeah.
They find that fun. I absolutely agree. Every individual bit is a fun thing. But mash it all together and never explain anything, give no background, the exploration of the time we live in. We live in 2434.
Yeah.
So 400 years in the future or something. And the references that they use is very current. I understood certain references and certain things that they think. And
like, there's no world building.
There's no world building.
Yeah, because I remember you telling me once and you were really frustrated where they were like, and then they knocked on the door and like delivered a letter and they posted something through the letterbox or whatever.
They went to a planet and searched for somebody and searched for a house.
Yeah.
And they found the house because they found the street and the number 7B and it had a letterbox.
Yeah.
What? In 2434, there are letterboxes. Like, we live in a place where Denmark has stopped their postal service.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's no more letter delivery.
Yeah, everybody is enough, well connected enough that...
If we have spaceships, sentient spaceships, why does still anybody needs a letterbox?
I understand a letterbox for some delivery of important stuff or whatever. But yes, that wouldn't be the way that you would track down somebody on another planet and find them by finding their street address.
Yeah.
You would go to their...
And so these little bits...
Slippy, elegant opponent.
That... Stop it. So what I'm saying is that there is some like an author writes something.
Yeah.
And to them, it feels like...
Yeah, of course, that'll be
it. Of course, that'll be it. But it's unobserved. Like, there's no reflection done.
See, with a previous review that we did of the adventures of Amina El Serafi,
yeah.
Where it's sort of like, oh, we can just assume that everybody reading this book will just map on their experiences of our world,
yeah.
Where cops are around and politicians are bad and all that other kind of stuff. And,
yeah.
But that is also happening in the 13th century.
Yeah.
Or 4 centuries in the future, we'll just say some stuff and people go like, yeah, but this is a science fiction world. Yeah, but you know what I mean by when you go and look at the, you know, like there isn't any world building or, you know, progression of anything going on. It's sort of just throw out, just reference some tropes like spaceships with personalities, with subroutines, go.
Yeah.
Vampires and werewolves and spiders and just that as well. And also just stuff from our modern world, which is like track someone down by the letterbox and the number. Kids live in upstairs bedrooms. Cops, all cops are bad.
Yeah.
People are retired and financially stable. Some people study pharmaceuticals, and you're like, wait, are we 400 years in the future or 800 years in the past? And it's sort of like, doesn't matter. We're just saying stuff. Like, it's just put it down. Just get across the vibe of what we want to say, and it doesn't matter like what time frame something's happening in, like 1,000 years in the past or 1,000 years in the future. Just write down stuff that people in 2025 can identify with, and that'll be good enough.
Yeah. So in the in Of Monsters and Mainframes, you have sentient spaceships that bully each other, or like that make fun of the other ship and like call it names, and then that ship is like...
That does happen in the culture novels.
I understand, but it's done... And that's why I wanted to reflect on it.
Yeah.
Why does it annoy me so much in this book? And what is in the other books that where I think, yeah, it works. It's anyway.
Yeah, the thing is, so when Ian M. Banks does something, he'll be like, you know, there'll be some like in Accession or whatever it is, and the ship minds will come together.
Yeah.
And some of the ship minds are like, duh, look at me.
Yeah.
I'm just a general service vehicle. And the orbitals are like, oh, look at me, I'm a scatterbrain. You know, the character work is good enough that you understand that the different ships have different concerns and different things.
Yeah.
That if somebody isn't as interested in, you know, contact as them or isn't interested in exploration as them, they're like, look, I've got a bigger brain than you and I'm way more powerful, but I'm just sitting here on an orbital. I've got like, you know, these trillion people or billion people that I'm looking after or whatever it is. There's
but
different concerns.
First of all, it's explained the background of how that came to be like that
what,
is explained.
The ship lines are different.
Why they are like that is explained. And it feels to me like authors like Ian M. Banks literally thought about the whole story of that one spaceship.
They put any amount of thought into it.
Like it felt like they were built out characters and there's reasons why they're like this.
Yeah.
In this book, it feels like, oh yeah, this is how it is. And of course we have the big orbitals that think like this and the war, little warship that thinks like this and whatever. And of course they're going to act like that. But it's never really explained. And so this is one criticism I have about books, like in this respect of Monsters and Mainframes, but also books like it. They rely heavily on the work that the reader does.
Right.
The reader has to have huge background knowledge of
the name of the ship that Dracula arrived on when it arrived in Whitby in 18 something.
That helps the reader. It also helps the reader if they have quite a creative mind of literally coloring in a world that we're in.
Mm.
Because the book of Monsters and Mainframes, it really feels like you get a coloring book.
Yeah.
That there are things printed on the pages.
Yeah.
But you have to put the work in and put the colours in, the shading.
I'm not even sure
that
a colouring book. I think a dot to dot, or the join the dot, if you know what I mean.
Oh, maybe that, yeah.
There's dots there, and it's sort of like, here's dot one, and then you look around, oh, number two's there, and then you start drawing, and the picture arrives.
Yes.
And it feels like they've just like shot some dots, you know, they just scatter dots, and then you start joining them. You've got to do the work to join them up, and then when you join them up, the picture isn't even very good at the end.
And the picture is what you put it in.
Yeah.
Some other person could put something completely different down. So there are scenes in this where things could be really nicely described, but they stay in this sort of in the sort of TV show screenplay kind of. So yes, the spider robot goes out and paints some anatomically correct skulls on the spaceship.
Right.
That's the information we get. We don't actually get to see it. It's not described.
We're told that something has happened.
That is happening.
Rather than shown it. Yeah, it's the show don't tell kind of thing.
So, and it's, I understand how readers can be really, really, let me just finish.
Okay, sorry.
And they readers can get really bored by authors explaining too much detail.
Right.
I understand.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like if you go read Heinrich Mann and he wrote the Buddenbrooks and there's pages and pages of description of furnitures, that is the opposite end of the spectrum, right? But there is the opportunity to use words and language to describe something that you as the author see in your head in a way that is fun, that is possible without boring the reader. I know it is a fine line, but it can be done.
Here's the thing. Mm. When you just say the spider goes out and draws a skull on the side of the ship, that just reminds me of a scene from Firefly where they have to attach, you know, dead bodies to the outside of the ship so it looks like a Reaver ship or whatever the scene is.
Yeah.
That it feels like, again, I know it's weird to say this, it feels like that's what the author is doing. They're like, you know that scene in the Firefly where they go out and they put skulls around or dead bodies around the ship so it looks like a Reaver ship? Yeah. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah, because also they take over the ship and becomes a pirate ship.
Right.
That also is in this book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's just taking all the different...
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, again, I know I've used this in the past a lot. It is like somebody making a recipe.
Right.
So, okay, they have seen this works and that is fun, this is fun. So I take this ingredient and that ingredient.
It's just trope listing.
Yeah.
Here's this trope. I'll make sure that's in my book.
Yes.
Here's this trope.
Yes.
That's why I just looked here of these genres. You know, it's not genres. It's like shelves that people have put them on. You know, Goodreads, it says genres. And then when you click on it, it says top shelves.
Yes.
So they're never quite sure, is this a list of genres or just shelves? And you get, you know, all the, you know, to read, science fiction, horror, fantasy, did not finish, 197 people. But you just get down to paranormal, adventure, vampire, werewolf, you know, all that kind of stuff's in there as well. But you just get, queer, LGBTQ, LGBT, which is a different one as well, LGBTQIA is in there. And again, if you just put so many of these mentions into the book, people have just got more words to type into Goodreads shelves or into trope listing things.
Yeah, and they think they find themselves in that. They think they feel represented.
Who's they?
The readers.
No, yeah, what
the
I'm saying
different,
is...
Because the more different things you put in, the more different people will find an interest in it.
But what I'm saying is that, like, LGBTQ is being listed alongside werewolf. Being listed alongside aliens, you know, it's like
because apparently the werewolf is a lesbian.
My point is, it's a shotgun blast of tropes.
Yeah,
and if you think about it again, don't want to come back to Ian and Banks or anything like that. Mm. But if you were to do the same thing about Inversions, which again is the last book we're going to do. You don't get to list werewolves and LGBTQ and vampires and aliens and all that kind of stuff. It's like fantasy / sci-fi, you know, political intrigue, you know, whatever. And once you get past that, there isn't the next thing. There isn't, 42 pages worth of top, like, shelves, tropes and genres that this can be listed within. And it feels like someone is just sort of like, Firefly, there's a romance, there's a love story, there's action, there's this. And so I'm like, yeah, but that is that's an episodic TV show where within each episode you can explore, now we're going to explore family, now we're going to explore leadership, now we're going to explore action, now we're going to explore intrigue, now we're going to explore economics, now and but each episode
concentrates on one
topic. Like each 30 to 45 minute episode allows you to concentrate deeply onto one shelf on Goodreads or one genre or one trope.
And out of this book, you could literally write, I would say, 10 books.
Yeah.
There is stuff in this book that could fill 10 big good exploration books.
But this, it's just all crammed in and said, here's one novel with everything in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that makes it so unsatisfying on so many levels, because I really want to enjoy this kind of stuff. But also, it says something about horror. There's no horror in this. Okay, there's
But it's got a Frankenstein in it.
No Frankenstein in this one is really thoughtful and... I don't know.
One of the genres here, he says it's called retellings. 12 people have put this in retellings.
Yes, because it's literally trying to retell lots of different stories in this.
Yeah.
As you said, with the Dracula. I didn't get that. That's the book. That's the ship. That's the name of the ship. I did not know that. But
okay.
So it's basically trying to retell about these outcasts.
Right.
Right? They are all our outcasts. All of them.
Oh, is it a found family book in the end?
Yes. That too. And I really, I understand the urge and I understand the...
17 people list it as a found family book.
I understand that. But this is not the way to write books like that. It's just too... It's just too broad. It's not reflected. There is no exploration done. Like, why is that? Why do you want and need a found family? And what does it mean?
This book is just, this can be shelved on the found family shelf along with, you know, A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet.
But,
you know.
But in comparison, really, The Small Angry Planet is... fun. Good. It's actually
the book that I couldn't finish.
Yes, the book that you couldn't finish is actually...
And so, the book that you gave like 2.5 stars to is now the high watermark compared to this book.
Of Monsters and Mainframes, there are two more points in this book that I want to mention why that also didn't work for me.
Okay, let's knock them off quickly and then we'll give a rating.
Okay, so one of it, at the end, they talk about how they're being guided into a port, they need to go into this where the spaceship docks, right into the dock.
Yeah, star dock.
It's a classic thing.
Science fiction area, yeah.
And it feels very much like Barbara True Love, read something about maritime things. Ships, whatever. It's coming up a lot with the ships and stuff. And I understand that somebody understands that if you go into a port, you're being helped by pilots, you're being helped by tugboats.
Tugboats, yeah.
On the water, in the sea.
Naval.
Tugboats make sense. However, if you write a book about spaceships, sure, they're called spaceships. And lots of naval terms are being used.
Nautical stuff comes in
there.
You
have a captain and all nautical terms.
And a pilot.
But I'm pretty sure that in space you would not talk about tugboats. You would talk about tugs.
Or space tugs, or
you would come up with terms.
Yes, okay, but she doesn't.
She doesn't. She uses the word tugboat.
Okay, a tugboat towed the Demeter.
Into the port. And these are the kind of things that really annoy me.
Yeah.
Okay, that was one thing. The other thing that was annoying about this is this now coming to the main thing with the AI of the spaceship.
Yeah.
There are sections in this book, and I read it as an ebook, so I was able to just skip pages. So you have pages in this that are written down in binary.
100001.
At the beginning, when the first author did that, it was novel. It was fun. You went online, you copied that text into the binary translator because humans are not... I mean, there are probably humans who can understand what is actually written. But I need a translator for that. So I put it in the translator. It came out with some nonsensical garbage. So I did not try that anymore. So every time a binary code chapter came up, I just skipped it.
Yeah, of course.
However,
Yeah.
People who listen to the audiobook.
Which you didn't do.
Which I didn't do, but I saw some people reading, some writing reviews about that. You're being read out ones and zeros.
Literally, the audiobook narrator is just saying 100100100.
Yeah,
we've had this before. I've heard this on other audiobooks. I just remember, actually, though, one thing that was good was that Peter Watts did something in one of his books.
Yeah.
But because I had a PDF copy of it, mm-hmm. again, I could just search through for every O, which was now a zero, and every L, which was now a one. I think I just wrote a Python script to look through the whole thing. Oh, I copied everything out and just worked it out. And it was I think it was like a website address that you went to and then had a little bit more extra story to
yes.
it. Something like that.
So my main takeaway from this book is if you want to read about vampires in space, go read Peter Watts.
Well, no, he's doing something different in Blindsight.
No, but it doesn't matter. If you want to read actual horror and body horror, read Peter Watts. If you want sentient AIs, go and find yourself
probably another Peter Watts book. Yes, I know
Peter Watts. No, but also Enon Banks. Okay, you want,
It's like, why aren't you just reading the culture books again? Because you're gonna get all of the spaceships bullying each other in Accession.
Or you literally go and I don't know. You go and read Peter F. Hamilton. You go and read Ursula K. Le Guin. Mm. You go and read the original Dracula story. You go and read Mary Shelley. Yeah,
but these books are just for people who just want something new and light and frivolous, some beach reading, and just to turn their brain off.
But it's not even that.
I know, but the reason these books get published...
But then go and read Becky Chambers, who does that better.
I know, but you run out of Becky Chambers books, and you don't want to pick up a nine-book series from the early 1990s.
Yeah, but you should.
I know.
Because they're better.
But the publishing world doesn't make money from those.
You go and watch Firefly.
I know, but the book publishers don't make money from reprinting the culture novel books again, or C.J. Cherry again, or even Ursula K. Le Guin again. That's not where the money is.
No, but you as the reader, you can decide what to read, and I would suggest read all the other things.
Yes, but you can't just say all modern shit science fiction shouldn't be read, because some of these books aren't shit, and they become modern classics.
Yeah, but you never know. Anyway,
Well, I would know. I just need to look at the front cover and read the description of this to go like, oh, no, this is not for you. This author isn't giving me, it won't be giving me what I want.
And I'm always so torn, because I do like people writing new books and stories and all this kind of stuff.
You want to like the new stuff.
I really want to like, I want to support authors like, and I'm glad I got this from the library and didn't buy it. I'm sorry, but this is just, it's such a pity that literally this could be 10 books if explored in full.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's
or it could be it one it, good book.
One good book, which would then concentrate on one thing.
Yeah.
But it's just throwing around things and
it's people who aren't science fiction authors, who haven't read the explorations of science fiction, who just again list tropes. Just mention stuff, someone who hasn't read lots of time travel stuff will write a book and just be like, oh, and now I'll just add some time travel stuff, and just loses control of it because they don't know all of the history of different ways that people have done time travel.
Yeah, but then you should start small.
No, but these people shouldn't start small, because they are coming in to the science fiction or fantasy or genre world from outside it. And aren't interested in all of that, but they can have a colourful front cover, put in some found family or romance stuff, and just have a space adventure. And it doesn't matter that they are not engaging with the history of science fiction or other genre stuff. They are just listing tropes in the book, Not that they're listing it, not that other people list tropes when they read it. Literally in the book is sort of like, and now a vampire. We all know what that is. Great, move on. And now a space alien. We all know what that is. Great. And now AI ships that talk to each other. We all know what that is, isn't it? Yeah, because we've like, because the people who did engage with science fiction tropes, you know, and did engage with that kind of stuff, you know, from this like Tor wave stuff from, you know, 10, 15 years ago through today, it's, this is someone just coming in and riding the coattails of previous genre tropes, which have been developed by other authors better. And they don't need to do any development of tropes. No. They don't need to do any development of themes. They don't need to do any development of ideas or characters or anything like that, because they can just not even take these characters off the shelves and do retellings, but literally just name things.
I actually don't think that, actually, I forgot the name again.
Barbara Truelove.
Truelove. I always think Lovegood.
Lovegood.
Truelove.
I can Lovegood.
I wouldn't even say, I would even think that she did all the research and she did all the
what
reading.
What research?
Like,
what research?
What research could possibly have been done
to write that book?
Well, she probably read Dracula and Frankenstein.
No. But that's not what, that's just those things.
Yeah.
If this is a book that's the monsters part, what's the mainframes part? What work has Barbara Truelove done to make this into satisfying science fiction as well as a comedy about, you know, where the same characters, the same monsters come back, you know, the same ones that are in the Hammer horror, the same ones which are in the whatever the latest retelling is.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just lacking in world building so heavily that I can't even, I don't even know.
That's the point. No work. There is no world building in there needed, because it is just a generic sci-fi space opera setting for these things to be pasted onto. Like you say, that somebody goes down to a planet and tries to find someone, and they do it by looking up the street address and seeing and like putting something through their post box. Like street addresses in the future, like street addresses are legacy built, you know, left over from, we have these streets and we need to deliver something. So let's give them all a name. And then let's put a number on each front door. Yeah. And now we're like, well, you can use postcodes to map onto that.
But Ireland is further than this.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing is that, like, yeah, Ireland postcodes are just like literally just GPS, redone GPS stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there are many ways of doing this. You know, that I say this. Actually, I don't want to give it exactly say what it is, which is the slippery elegant opponent, which is, you know, the three words, just the three word stuff, and you can locate stuff down into a 4 meter square.
And like, you know what?
I'm just saying.
I know. This is.
I'm just saying the better way of doing this is, instead of looking at street numbers, is just actually say. There's a system that the entire world, every 2 square meters in the entire world, has a unique three-word string of... I'm just saying, there is, like, off the top of my head, I can find a better way. Literally, the start of... Let me put it this way. The opening line of so many science fiction books does this job better. The opening line of, you know, 1984, you know, the clock struck 13. Mm. And you're like, oh, great, the clock striking 13 is not what the clock would normally strike when, you know...
There's something weird.
You know, like, different. All of these books just say something which is like, just that little one twist, and I bet... Anything. I would bet you 200 euros that there isn't a single thing in that book which is cleverer as the opening line of the book 1984, which is to say the clock struck 13.
Yes. The thing is...
What?
Two things.
Yeah.
An author has amazing abilities to just come up with anything.
Yeah.
They can, if it's happening in the future, if it happens on a different planet,
yeah, but
they
what
can
I'm
come
saying
up
is,
with anything they want.
Barbara Truelove,
be creative.
Probably in that entire book, doesn't have a single original idea, single original science fictional idea. So why are you reading it? Why are we getting annoyed about this?
Anyway, this is the first sentence of this book.
It starts off, 01100001 0110010 0, and that's it.
That's the first.
So the opening line of this book is a joke about thinking in binary.
Yes. Then when it actually starts with text, this is how it
awaiting
looks like.
Awaiting input. I'm awake. This is...
And just the first few readable things. I wake. It's a beautiful day. My engines are roaring. My centrifuge is spinning. And my radiation shields are buzzing.
Right. Again, not a single thing which is interesting about anything. Like, again, anything like that. Again, like, if that's how a spaceship wakes up, it's sort of like, yes, the three most generic things we can think of.
Yeah. And it is somehow explained at some point that a centrifuge maybe makes the gravity work on the
ship. Yes, the most obvious thing from... 2001 A Space Odyssey, a movie from like 1961 or whenever it comes from.
Yeah. Anyway, I really want to like books.
You want to be enthusiastic about books?
I want to be enthusiastic. I want to see authors being so creative that they bring something to the table that I've never thought of.
Here's the thing. Do you know what Sturgeon's Law is? Sturgeon's Law is Theodore Sturgeon's Law.
Yeah.
Which is, people said, I'm not going to read, people said to, you know, at the time, yeah, I'm not going to read science fiction because 90% of science fiction is crap.
Oh, yeah.
And he said 90% of everything is crap.
Mm.
Here's the thing about being a book reviewer, is that when you read new stuff, 90% of what you're going to read is going to be crap, is not going to be worth it.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And so that's why, again, me thinking like, I'll wait until the end of the year and then let other people wrap up what their favorite books are.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to compile the books which were mentioned on numerous other, you know, best of the year science fiction. So I'm trying to like...
Already let other people
go through the filters and things like that, you know. Oh, and you know, oh, this was nominated for a Goodreads award. Mm. It's sort of like, if it's nominated for a Goodreads award, it's like, that's like now a negative filter. But then we read Shroud, and that was actually worth reading. You know what I mean? By Adrian Tchaikovsky.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of thing. By you just going, oh yeah, somebody mentioned this book and on the SFBRP listeners, and I gave it a shot in the dark. 90%, 9 out of 10 of those books that you're just going to give a random chance to are going to be crap.
Yeah.
They're not going to be for you. 10% of the recommendations, 10% of award-nominated books, 10% of books, you know, all of these science fiction books, all of these romance books, all of these found family books, all of these, you know, shelved on all of the, you know, how many shelves can we get on? How many tropes can we list? You know,
yeah.
All of these books, only 1 in 10 is going to be like, yeah, 4-star book.
Yeah.
This is a good book. This was perfect. This was written for me.
Yeah.
And that's why you latch on to authors that do it for you.
Yes.
And when they don't, you're kind of disappointed. And you're like, oh, I see what you're going for, Alistair Reynolds. But sorry, your latest book's only 2.5 stars rather than a 4-star book.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you latch on to favorite authors, because it gives you more than a 1 in 10 chance of reading a book which is for you.
Yes.
Which isn't shit.
Yes.
You know.
And there are two kinds of books like that.
Yeah.
There are books that are so challenging and strange that my brain can't latch on.
Yeah.
This was not one of those.
No.
I was able to read this, finish it. It was an easy read.
Yeah.
Like, really. Like, the language isn't difficult. It's quite accessible. Except for, of course, you have to have all the background knowledge for it to actually make a little bit of sense. And anyway, if you want to understand my thought processes more, there's one Goodreads, I think 1 or 2-star review that really reflected that very well, written down, and
yeah.
I took how many minutes now?
We've just spent 53 minutes talking about this book, and we probably shouldn't have.
Yeah, but I like to explain my reasoning or why I think something.
Yeah, no. I think it's going to be a good chat. Sorry, Lindsay, your fourth favorite, or you know, your honorable mention from last year didn't hit with Juliana.
Absolutely.
And again,
not.
Each new thing that Juliana told me about it made me less likely to read it. So
you listening to to my review of it, you avoided a Luke rant.
Yeah, you wouldn't. Don't need a rant from me. Star rating, go.
So one star.
One star? Mm. Okay. But you did finish it.
I did finish
it. You did finish it.
And if you want to read about all the things, read this book. There's probably something in for you.
If you want to be unsatisfied about all the things,
if you want to imagine a lot of things,
yeah,
go for it. If you don't mind stumbling over things and then thinking like, why in 2434 would they think or say that? There's no reason for
that. Don't think about it. Anyway, on space vampires, what Peter Watts does in Blind Sight, he's just trying to be cleverer, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
He's not being like, what if Dracula suddenly turned up? It's sort of like, no, what would be the science fictional foundation of vampires in space? Yeah. And why would they be there? And that's what the book is about.
And how would they survive there?
What if a psychopath predator is the best thing to have on a spaceship which is exploring a hell... whatever, a hell ship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And sometimes, maybe...
it's an advantage to have that on board.
A psychopathic, sociopathic predator human, or a sub-breed of predator human, is the correct person to have along with you on a hell, when you're investigating a, you know, Event Horizon-style hell ship.
Investigation. Yeah. Investigation, exploration of why something happens and is important.
Or we can literally just have Dracula turn up in a story. That's a good sigh. Let's leave it on that sigh. You can follow us on Instagram and on Goodreads and on Blue Sky and on Mastodon. We're in all the places, or all the places where you should be in 2026 anyway.
I wanted to mention one more thing.
Oh, about the book or just in general?
Just in general.
Okay.
Because you said where you can meet us and talk to us. We got an email and you forwarded me that email.
Oh yeah, from a listener.
Thank you so much for that email. I really appreciated
getting... I archived it already. I didn't see who it was from. But thank you. Thanks for the people who aren't on social media. Someone said, that's from Mark. Thank you very much, Mark, who said something like, I'm not on any socials, but I do listen to the podcast. Thanks a lot for the podcast.
Thank you. I love hearing that because to me it's always very like we just talk about it and it goes out to nowhere.
And I never tell Juliana how many people are listening to the podcast because I myself have not looked up how many people listen to the podcast in the last 15. It's probably been 15 or 16 years since I looked up how many people listen to the podcast, and I am happier for it.
Yes.
So thank you for everyone who emails luke@juggler.net. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's very appreciated and gives me... I like it that people enjoy us talking about books.
Yep. And this was a Juliana episode. Right, I think we should feel... Because you're just now looking at your phone. I can't see
I'm trying to find the review that I thought was reflecting my thoughts.
That's it from us. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.